Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. When author Paula Hawkins was commuting in and out of London for college, she would board an above-ground train that would rumble into the city behind people's houses and often allowing her to peek inside and imagine the lives of those inhabiting the trackside residences. That experience has become Hawkins's debut novel, The Girl on the Train. It tells the story of Rachel Watson, a commuter who is obsessed with a perfect couple that she sees from the train that just happens to live a few houses away from her ex-husband. When the wife of the couple goes missing, Rachel gets involved. Again, the title of the new book is The Girl on the Train. It's a pleasure to welcome Paula Hawkins to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It is hard to believe that this is a debut novel, so I will ask the question of what it is like, what it has been like for you to have your first book, your first novel, received in such a successful way.
It's been astounding, actually. I never expected a reception like this. I think I should point out that this is a debut thriller. I had written other books under a pseudonym, but this is the first book that's published under my name, and it's my first crime novel.
So what does that tell you in the sense of, do you think this was what you were always meant to do, or is it more the marketplace of what they're interested in reading?
Oh, I think it's definitely what I was meant to do. In my previous books, I wrote sort of what they call women's fiction or chick lit in the UK. I'm not sure what it would be called here. But the books kept getting darker and darker and more terrible things kept happening to people in them. And so it was very clear to me that the direction I should be heading in was towards the thriller crime genre, which is what I feel comfortable with and what interests me. And it's the area that I like to read in.
So how accurate was I in the introduction of this novel coming out of your experiences as a commuter in London?
It did come out of those experiences. I mean, there wasn't one eureka moment, but I did always enjoy that feeling of being able to look in on people's houses as you go past on the train. I still do. And if you see these people every day, or you see their homes every day, you start to almost feel a sense of connection with them. There's things that you recognize, perhaps a print on the wall or something like that, and you feel like you sort of know the kind of people that live there. But then I also started, sort of later on, I started idly wondering what one would do if one saw, for example, an act of violence or something sinister or something strange. And would you say anything? What sort of position would you be in as a witness if you've just seen something really fleeting? So it definitely did come out of those experiences, but it's been quite a long time coming.
What do you think it is about us that we will often in our minds when we see people try to figure out what the relationship is, try to figure out what they do for a living? I guess it's a game, a time filler, but it is there's a psychological thing to it, isn't there?
There is, and When I think about my own experiences, when I first started these journeys, and I just moved to London, and I was a bit lonely, and there was a sense of wanting to kind of make connections with people, almost a sort of sense of longing when you saw other people's lives and you could imagine that they were really happy or really interesting, that they had, you know, lots of wild parties or something like that. You can put yourself into their shoes, into their homes, and imagine what you would be like if you lived there. I think that's really compelling.
So tell us a little bit about Rachel. I found her to be a fascinating character because she is broken up from her marriage. She is quite bereft. She has a serious drinking problem. She's living with a friend, and things are just not going her way.
We're seeing Rachel at her absolute worst in this book. She is basically hitting rock bottom at this point. As you say, she's her marriage has broken up, and she's still very deeply in love with her ex-husband, who has now moved on and replaced her and has started a family with another woman. And she has a drink problem, which has just got worse and worse. So, I mean, we are seeing her in a very vulnerable and fragile state. But I think that there's plenty to like about Rachel too. I think you can see over the course of the book she starts to fight back and starts to try, you know, fight to overcome the problems that she's got herself into. So I think I hope at least that there is enough to like about Rachel that readers will empathize with her.
Well, you do root for her because you want her to get better. Early in the book, you write that this sense of shame, in writing as Rachel, the sense of shame I feel about an incident is proportionate not just to the gravity of the situation, but also to the number of people who witnessed it. She is often trying to, and this is a large theme of the book, trying to recall what has happened to her.
Yes, she's somebody who suffers from blackouts when she drinks too much, and this is a very frightening experience for her because it makes her feel incredibly vulnerable. Well, she is incredibly vulnerable because she doesn't know what she's done, and she would need to ask other people to recount this to her if there are witnesses, but actually is too ashamed to ask people. And the book is also about, it's to a large degree, it's about our perceptions of other people. So this feeling that she doesn't want people to witness who she is, it is a theme that goes through. She doesn't like to be seen, even though she really likes seeing. She's a voyeur, but she doesn't like to be seen.
And that comes out of a certain amount of embarrassment, of course.
Mm. Oh yes, shame. She's completely self-loathing at the beginning of this book. Although, as I say, as the course of the book goes on, she starts to strengthen and see that, you know, that not everything about her is bad.
There is a point when an incident happens that she wants to remember, and she starts to think about, if she goes into some sort of hypnosis, that perhaps she would be able to find out what happened. And she's reading up on this and finds out that actually, when you black out, it isn't simply a matter of forgetting what had happened, but as you write, but having no memories to forget in the first place. And she's struggling with that throughout the book.
Yeah, that's certainly, I think that is the sort of accepted thesis on what happens if you black out. The thing is, though, there are lots of things that can affect our memories of an incident. A traumatic incident can be suppressed. If you've had a blow to the head, which Rachel also has at one point, that can affect your memory for some time. So that's something which was actually quite useful to me as a writer, as a device, that we're not absolutely sure why Rachel doesn't remember what's happened to her. It might have been the alcohol, it might have been something else, which affects whether or not she would be able to recall it later on.
So she's on the train. She has this fantasy world that she has put in her mind of this couple, a glamorous couple that she sees who live just a few doors down from her ex-husband. And then one day the woman goes missing in that situation. And what do you think it is? Obviously, you write about it, but what do you think it is about her that wants her to get involved?
When she sees this couple, she's idealized them. She's romanticized them to them. They're this perfect golden couple with this perfect marriage. And she thinks to herself that that's what she and her husband used to be. She's sort of become attached to these people without actually knowing them. And the female half of this couple, when Megan goes missing, she feels absolutely as though she's already part of the story, that she's involved, that she knows these people, that almost that she's their friend. So, and she believes, because of something she's witnessed, that she may well hold the key to Megan's disappearance. So I think she feels she can't not insert herself into the investigation and become involved.
When she inserts herself it doesn't really make sense to anybody else, does it, as to why
Absolutely
she is
not.
Inserting herself. Right?
No, because she doesn't really know them. It's just a thing that she's convinced herself of because of this daily commute where she's seen them every day. She doesn't really know them.
And this, of course, doesn't make sense to her friend. It doesn't make sense to her ex-husband. It doesn't make sense to her ex-husband's new wife.
No.
People are trying to figure this out.
She's not behaving in rational ways. She's an obsessive with a drink problem. So, yes, she's not behaving the way one would expect someone to behave.
There is a point where she keeps on trying, as I mentioned. She's trying to bring back these memories of an event that happens. And she keeps on trying to resurrect some of those feelings. And there's one point in the book where about halfway through where you write that quote, blood is throbbing in my head, my heart pounding. I don't know whether what I'm seeing, feeling is real or not, imagination or memory. I squeeze my eyes tightly shut and try to feel it again, to see it again, but it's gone. And that section really shows the great frustration that she has throughout this book of not only not remembering, but also of her overall behavior and the effect that it has on trying to get to the bottom of what has happened.
Oh, yes, she's constantly filled with regret. But I think that is something that I think happens to a lot of addicts, that they repeat the same behavior. They keep regretting it, but they keep repeating it anyway. But yes, and that the feeling of searching for the memory is incredibly frustrating because she's constantly grasping for something which is like smoke. It's almost there, but not quite. So, yeah, I think that's a real sense of frustration that builds throughout the book.
Paul Hawkins is our guest in this week's book show. The name of the book is The Girl on the Train. It is published by Riverhead. When you started this process of looking at and writing in ultimately three voices, was that always the decision of writing in three different characters, telling the story from three different perspectives?
It wasn't. Actually, originally I wrote just from Rachel's perspective. Well, that's how I started writing. I then thought that there was no way I could tell the story the way I wanted to unless we heard from Megan. And she has Megan's part narrative actually happens earlier in time, and we have to find out her backstory. So I needed to get into Megan's head and to write her narrative too. And then later still, I decided to introduce the third narrative because I wanted the reader to be able to see Megan and Rachel from somebody else's perspective. So I wrote from Anna's, who is the new wife of Rachel's ex.
And it is hard, in reading it, it is hard to always trust your narrator, to trust who is telling you the story, to know if what they're telling you is indeed true.
Oh, they're all utterly unreliable. Rachel particularly, because she's, as we've discussed, she can't even trust her own memories. But the other two are giving you their slanted view of what's going on as well. This book is very much about perceptions. They're making judgments about the characters in this book, and we're seeing very much their take on events. So it's up to the reader to sort of negotiate between those three narratives and try and figure out who's really closest to the truth.
You see in the book of Rachel trying to find out information, and she does a lot of this through newspapers, through television, through media, of trying to find out information about the case. And even with that, when it is based in fact, there still is a spin that she puts on it to create a little bit of fantasy, to take it a few steps forward in her mind.
I think what she's trying to do when she reads the newspaper accounts, she's trying to make them fit her fantasy of what these people's lives are like. She wants them to, because she's created in her head this idea of them as the perfect couple, she can't reconcile that with the idea that actually maybe the husband is not this perfect man, that she's imagined him to be this wonderful, strong, caring protector, that perhaps he's something altogether different. So yes, she's constantly trying to fit the newspaper reports, the media reports, into her idea of what the real story is.
And when we hear from Megan and we hear her point of view, we learn that her life is pretty miserable too.
She's had a traumatic past. And the thing with Megan is that she's not really confronted the issues, the things that happened to her in the past. She's in her way of dealing with it has actually just been to run away from them. And as a result, she's constantly rather restless and looking to move on to the next thing because she's in some sort of sense of trying to escape her past catching up to her. So her state of mind is much more variable. She's very sort of flighty and jumps from one thing to the next.
When you were thinking about putting these three voices and having them then tell the story, did you know right away how it was going to turn out, what the ending was going to be, or did you arrive at that through after some time?
I knew in broad strokes what the ending would be. I knew most of the denouement, but there were some twists. There were some twists that came along as I was writing. Some of the characters changed, particularly Anna actually changed as I was writing her. Once I got in, started writing from her point of view and seeing things through her eyes, she changed for me. So there were some twists, but I had the broad outline in place at the beginning.
For you in writing, even your previous work, how do you think you have progressed as a novelist? You talked about content, but as far as the actual writing and as far as the quality and of the pacing and the beautiful way that you tell the story of just at such a great pace of reaching that point.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned pace because I think that's one of the stronger points about this book. It seems to be that's what people are responding to, that it's written in a sort of structure where you have morning and evening because we're seeing Rachel on her commute. So it's going one way on the train in the morning, coming back in the evening. But that sort of built up a rhythm of its own that sort of drives the story forward, I think. And so there we were seeing these very sort of short sections, little slices of people's lives every morning, every evening, over and over. And I think that is one of the key strengths of the book, getting that pace right so that you're sort of, you just want to keep going, you know, in this rather sort of locomotive fashion through the book.
That's interesting because I enjoyed that aspect of it, of the morning and evening, because you will often start off a part of the chapter by saying I'm on the 804 or I'm on the 807. So that timing is very important because it brings to mind the drudgery of our everyday, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's that commuter experience, and the book very much starts with the commuter experience, the slightly mundane going backwards and forwards, seeing all the same people, seeing all the same things, and then slowly sort of unpeeling that and realizing that what we are looking at is not what it first appears, and that this perhaps isn't such a mundane situation after all.
When Rachel gets involved and she starts to look into this and really is involved, but also is trying to work out her own issues. Her divorce is very much a part of this, of wanting to be back with her husband, or again, also perhaps even creating a fantasy of what that life was like.
Yes, definitely. She's also, not only has she romanticized the relationship of these people that she's obsessed with, she's romanticized what her marriage used to be like, or at least she's viewing it in a particular way. She feels, because of her drink problem, she has taken on all the responsibility for the failure of her marriage. She has decided that basically she was the one that was at fault, and we see that obviously that she did behave badly, but she's perhaps taken on rather too much blame. But yes, she's also romanticized that relationship to a certain degree.
Do you believe that the book you have written is dark?
Yes, I think it is. There's not a great deal of levity in it. It's a lot of people have commented that all the characters are very flawed, all are quite problematic. And we're seeing them at a point at which for a lot of them, their relationships feel precarious or they're in difficult situations. So, and yes, it's quite a dark view of these particular relationships at this particular time.
Do you enjoy indulging that dark side?
Oh, yes, definitely. I'm much more interested in tragedy and in darkness than I am in the lighter side of things.
How do you see following this up?
I'm working on another psychological thriller at the moment, which focuses on the relationship between two sisters, one of whom is actually dead when the book opens. So it's got quite a gothic feel. It's very different to this book, but there'll be certain atmosphere, I hope, a sense of menace that I hope to carry through it, as there is in The Girl on the Train.
I did wonder about that in reading this novel, is if you were ever tempted to go the flashback route.
The flashback route?
Yes.
Sorry.
Well, to write in a flashback, a write of what the marriage was, to write what the relationship was.
Not really. I think it would be difficult. There are things you need to reveal and things you need to conceal, and I think the flashback route might have been very difficult in terms of there are some revelations that you have to keep until the end in terms of the plotting.
Is it fun for you when you hear people say that that it surprised them, or that it didn't go where they were expecting? Because that's ultimately, I assume, for even you as a reader of thrillers, that's what you want.
I do, although it's not the end of the world if people guessed who did it. I'm not the whodunit part of it. Yes, obviously it's great if it's a complete surprise. But again, I don't think it necessarily detracts from the enjoyment of a book. It certainly doesn't for me if I spotted who the killer is maybe early on, as long as how and why you get to the end is satisfying and psychologically convincing and the plot is compelling. But yes, obviously it's great when people say, oh, it was a complete shock to me.
Mm-hmm. And you have there's limited characters there who could have. So
true, exactly. I think you've got a 1 in 6 shot of guessing.
Right.
So.
the two things that are used so much in reviews, one is Hitchcockian, and I'm interested in how you react to that.
I take that as a huge compliment. And I certainly when I originally thought about this idea of seeing something from a train, the Rear Window was in my head. I love that film, and that did occur to me. I think there is a Hitchcockian atmosphere of sort of paranoia and self-doubt that occurs in this book too. So yeah, I take that as a great compliment.
And the other comparison is, of course, with Gillian Flynn's Gone Girl. And I suppose that comes mostly from about relationships and the element of surprise in a marriage.
Yes, I think that it's partly that. It's also having a very flawed female protagonist, I think. That's another reason for the comparisons. Again, I mean, it's flattering to me. I love Gone Girl. I thought Amy was a fantastic character. However, they are actually very different books. Those protagonists, although they are both flawed, could not be more different. So, I can see why those comparisons are made, but to me, they're incredibly different books.
Yes, because these two characters are incredibly different, and just by, well, economic circumstances alone.
Yeah. Also, when we see Gone Girl is really about the disintegration of a marriage, whereas this book, the marriage is already gone. Rachel's been ripped out of domesticity already. She's lost her home, she's lost her marriage, she's lost everything. So I think in those terms of those situations, it's very different.
There's a point where you write rather early where Rachel says, I'm not beautiful and I can't have kids, so what does that make me? Worthless.
Again, as I said earlier, we're seeing Rachel hitting rock bottom here, but I do think there is still to some degree a view of women having two, main, fulfilling two main roles in life, and one is, to be beautiful and attractive to men, and the other is to be good mothers. And if you want either of those things, it can feel very... it can make one feel incredibly undervalued. And obviously there are a lot of, Rachel also happens to have lost her job, so she doesn't even have that to fall back on. But she is feeling very she is feeling worthless as a woman. She's feeling like she's completely failed as a woman because her husband has rejected her and because she's been unable to have a child.
Well, the book is a fantastic read. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed reading it.
Thank you.
The new book is The Girl on the Train. It is published by Riverhead. Paula Hawkins, what a delight. Thank you very much for sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.